Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Deep Thoughts. On this late evening recording here, it's about 2 o'clock in the morning. So I wanted to start off by just saying that one of the things that keeps the show going is my need to chew up, you know, deep thinking. You know, sometimes not everything we talk about is extremely deep, but part of it is just, you know, roaming around your head. It's just, it's yours. You got your brain. And I love the fact that you guys want to join me in the journey. And when I see really great comments, or any comment in general, I know that you guys have experienced the ride. And I hope you're having fun. Again, suggestions are always welcome. And there's all kinds of ways to communicate with me. The email address you can communicate with me on is youtube@deepthoughtsradio.com. That comes straight to me. The other way is to put it in the comments. The other way is to go to the Locked Facebook group and get in there. And you can private message me or friend me. My account's called Deep Mind. I did try to call it Deep Thoughts, but someone else already had it. So that's why it's kind of a narcissistic little name there. I didn't mean to do that. And I just saw something the other day that Deep Mind is somebody else who's involved with some number 17 things. And so I was like, oh, wow, that's crazy. I'm surprised people haven't started, you know, pounding me personally as if I'm that person. So today, I thought I'd cover something that I just haven't covered. I'm sitting at my desk and I'm importing in last night's video. And I just thought, you know, what can I do today? Because there's almost never any preparation. Some of you can see that. For some reason, my cigar has got a really blocked cap. I'm digging it out with my fingernail here. You don't want a blocked cigar because it will make your mouth hurt after a while because you're sucking too much. You don't even realize it until the inside of your mouth starts to hurt. So I'm going to go get my perfect draw and poke a big ass hole in this thing, and I'll be right back. For those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, it's this little ninja sword. It's made by a dentist in Orange County. This is like the second version of it. He's very serious about this. You just unscrew one side, pull out the little ninja sword, which has these little teeth on them. I think you can see them in the camera. I block it there. You can kind of see it if we can focus for a second. So you just poke it into your cigar. You got to be very careful not to go sideways. Otherwise, you will definitely destroy the stick. Yeah, it has a branch in it or something. And it goes in one way. And it just pulls out a little stick or whatever's in there. You probably should wipe it off before you put it in your mouth. Let's see if I can grab whatever the hell that is. This is an awesome little stick. I don't even know what the hell this is. Definitely something in this one. These all smoked fantastically. And this is they just call it a Hoyo. It's got a band like that. When they're properly humidified, pretty amazing sticks. All right. Being psychic. Why have we not covered this in the past? Well, you know, I've touched on it a little bit. For any of you who saw my episode on horoscopes, spelled with an H or WH, I really don't like people telling other people what their life is going to be like. But being psychic is several different things, right? It can be being psychic can be someone who claims to be able to, you know, see your past, see what you're all about. And tell you, you know, hey, this is going to happen to you in your life. And being psychic could be someone who's like, tobacco on my face. What is that guy? John Edwards. Used to have the show on TV. I don't know where that guy is anymore. Of course, I don't watch TV, so he could still have a raging show. And I'm treating him like he's got an obituary already. But he would be able to talk to dead people. That was his thing. We'll go through these. Then there's sort of the psychic that works with police officers and they can touch an object like the movie Dead Zone with Christopher Walken. based on the book by Stephen King. And they can see things, you know, that object experienced, and then help potentially police officers find a body, find something. And it's fascinating, isn't it? I thought about doing one on telekinesis as well. I just don't know if there's an hour's worth of it. But definitely being psychic is something that people have claimed to be able to do for years. There's the sort of cousin of being psychic, which I've talked about several times, which I won't cover in this episode, which is people being able to see your aura. I do think that that's fairly legit. But being psychic, because those are the big groups, right? Someone who can read your fortune, which at the same time you're saying they can see your past, in most cases, the ones that are reading your palm and all that kind of stuff, or your tarot cards, or read the tea leaves, that's another one. And then there's John Edwards, who reaches out and, you know, communicates through what used to be exclusively a seance situation, like the woman who owned the Winchester house, the wife of, you know, Mr. Winchester, who thought she was haunted by all the deaths caused by the Winchester rifle during the Civil War, who somehow connected that with building her house. Must have been a real estate agent or a construction agent or a banker who got her into that one, but she was super duper into seances, and she went crazy. She, you know, kept building this house in San Jose, California, which I've been to numerous times, probably at least 6 times, because my family would come out and go, well, what can we see? And I was like, hey, we go to the Winchester house. It's a trip, man. Staircases that go up to ceilings, doors that open to walls. She had a fascination with the number 13. So you would look at a sink drain, count anything in the room, and it was always 13. So she was sort of in that satanic stuff. So, you know, we're going to talk about, could it be legitimate? Well, my first impression is absolutely it could be legitimate. However, when connected to things like astrology, numerology, tarot cards, tea leaves, all that kind of stuff, palms, the design of your palms, supposedly where God hides all of your destiny, I don't believe that for a second. And there have been, again, numerous experiments with at least tarot card reading where people were asked to read the opposite result of the card to their subjects, their weekly subjects, of which they refused to do because they thought they were going to destroy these people's lives. Then a week later, the people came in and said, my God, the reading you gave me last week was the most accurate reading you've ever given me. And the guy he was in the East Coast, he was like a Harvard professor or something. He quit immediately and never did it again because he said, oh, this is all crap. But being psychic, let's tackle these one at a time here. I think we'll end with the talking to dead people one because I think that's more interesting. So we'll push that a little bit out. But let's talk about the one, let's start off a little spicy one. The idea that you can touch an object and get a vision from the object of where it was, who may have wielded it, who may have owned it. Let's say it's a weapon. Let's say it's an article of clothing from either the victim or the killer. Now, the truth is that you have, let's talk about the people who claim to have this capability. You know as well as I do that there's enough failures from psychics to say it doesn't work. Any one of those things I just said, John Edwards has failed miserably. At times, people who help police officers find things have also failed more times than they probably have succeeded. And there's just been absolute hoaxers out there that make stuff up. People have gone up to psychics on television shows and said, okay, here's a picture of a little girl. She disappeared. What happened to her? And the psychic will look at the picture and tell a huge story about how they were kidnapped, molested, killed, maybe even held for several years. And then the woman holding the picture goes, "Nope, you're totally wrong. It's me as a child. You're a fraud." Ding, you're out the door, right? So we've seen that too. But what makes someone claim to be psychic in the first place? Because there has to be a psychological profile that makes this occur. Well, you probably have, if this can happen at all, you will have legitimate people who can do it or who have done it. Boy, try to say that. And then you have people trying to get attention because they have that need. And then you might have just a straight up snake oil salesman, a shyster, a con man, con woman, the confidence trickster. And they're just trying to make money. So that's how they start off. Now let's talk about the negatives before we talk about the positives. The con man. Well, there are definitely factions in the world that teach this to their kids. It's an art. And it used to be more prevalent. But, you know, what's really interesting about it is you can go to palm readers, and I used to see them all the time at Venice Beach. And there was usually just, they had a certain type of personality, clothing. I think in the ancient past, there was, like the gypsies were always known for this kind of thing. And that's probably more stereotype than reality, but you know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if a particular race simply perfected this and passed it down. There may have been some truth to it. There may still be some truth to it, right? Who am I to judge, right? But we know there's confidence tricksters out there, con men, that do this kind of thing. But part of it is an element of entertainment. And I mention this every single time because this is the first time I ever heard a counter-argument to psychic abilities, tarot cards, because in the movie, the second movie that Prince ever made, the musician, was called Under the Cherry Moon, and he gave Marion Sherry, I think was her name, a box of beautiful tarot cards at her birthday party in the south of France, and then she just held on to him, but then they bump into her mother and another woman that Prince was actually being a gigolo for. And, "Oh, you got him tarot cards. Did you read tarot cards?" And he says, "I don't know if I believe any of this stuff. I think you just tell people what they want to hear and they make it happen." I thought that was simple and beautiful. Okay. How many situations have you known where that's been the case for you? Without any psychic thing around you, somebody simply said, "Well, maybe you're unhappy, or you're just in sort of a dead end situation in your life. You're not unhappy, but you're ready for a change." And someone says to you, "Well, why don't you just go do it?" "Do what?" "Do the thing you love." "What? That thing I love?" "Yeah. Why not? What's stopping you?" And then you either hear the person or you do it yourself, and you're like, "Okay. I never really thought about just doing what I want to do." And so that could be a push. Like my cousin who told me, "Why are you going to college? You already know how to do everything you love to do. You're making tons of money. Just keep doing it." And he was right. So maybe the con man starts off as a deliberate con. And this would be if they had no family that did it or no friends that did it, no mentors. And they're just trying it. They look on the internet, they figure out the cards, and they say what they want to say. Okay. But then what happens is that what they find out is that the person is actually taking more risks in life and having more success in life by being told, whatever you make up off the cards, off the die, off the tea leaves, or whatever. Maybe you can sense just by pure logic that they're about to take a senseless risk. And so you're reading that off of them as a warm reading, and we'll get to warm and cold readings in a second. And you go, "Well, that looks like a pretty dumb idea. So let me just throw out some bias without them knowing and blame it on the cards, blame it on the tea leaves," and then they go off and they're a little bit careful. instead of getting married overnight by some guy they met in Vegas or whatever, they take a little bit of caution, find out that they were just infatuated and life is a little bit better. And they find out, boy, if I had jumped on that, I would have suffered hardcore. They were a con man. They were trying to steal my money or whatever. And they will say that the psychic was the reason why. They're not lying. It's just the cause and effect model that was the reason why they were told what they were told was a little bit more direct than indirect. Meaning indirect being psychic, direct being just wisdom from the person reading to you. Because think about it. What's the difference between a psychic who reads your palms every day or your tarot cards or whatever and a psychologist or a priest, a good priest, doesn't touch kids? Well, they just see thousands of instances of life every single day and month and year and year and decade and what have you. And so they have a bunch of wisdom. You could probably just sit down with them and go, okay, here's the situation. I got this, 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 and this. Give me your opinion. Instead of saying, I'm going to keep my palm to myself. You don't have to do the card thing. I'm really paying you for your wisdom. People do it all the time for shrinks that don't do anything for them. You're my psychologist. How do you like that? All right. So maybe in the con man's eye, there's my philosophy of how to bill for your time is what I call the displacement payment method, which is if you displace me from making money, you pay for my time. That's it. You don't waste my time, I don't charge you any money. But if you want my time 100%, then there's a price for that. And I love to give you a service, right? And I like to get paid. But that's just a fair way to do it. So, same thing applies to the psychic. They're there for an hour, whatever time you're buying out of. I don't know how much that sells. There's actually a psychic place less than a quarter mile from me. And I've never gone in. I should probably just go in just for the experience. I think that'd be fun, right? Now, the other thing that the con man does is definitely create a dependency. Come back next week. Come in a couple days. We'll see how it works out. And so you got to be careful because they'll bleed you dry, right? But maybe a little bit of entertainment. Maybe you just need someone else to talk to and it just feels good. Because guess what? You're a human being and they're a human being and their experience in the human condition because of their job is really developed. And I've talked to people who take it absolutely seriously and they will only go to one person because they trust that person. And I know other people that do it just for entertainment. Venice Beach, it's usually entertainment. Hey, you know, they're only wanting $5 to read my palm for, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes and talk to me. Man, you'll have more fun in that 20 minutes than you'll have spending $50 down the street on some shitty dinner, right? So that's your total, like, almost a control case. They don't have any capabilities whatsoever. They can definitely read the cards properly. They can even read your palm based on all the rules and tell you a bunch of stuff. So they're following a discipline. But in the end, maybe what they have to contribute is more inside their soul than in any other external influence. Okay. Now, let's say you're going to talk to someone who is just going to talk to you. You're going to their house. There's no cards. There's no mechanism between the two of you. No astrology, no numerology, which is completely arbitrary. And astrology and astronomy, or astrology and numerology is it's one of those games where you ever played the game where someone says, okay, it could even be a meme that does it, right? They say, okay, take 22 and then add the year you were born, then subtract this, then do this and do that. And if you're a mathematician, you can automatically see that everything you've added to the equation or subtracted from the equation is then re-added to the equation by the time it's over, and they know exactly how to get you to a particular number because they've subtracted out all of your additions and then forced you to either add or subtract something else, and it's always the same year or something like that, right? Or they can get you to a number that's a part of your life by having you just use math that's logical to get to that year. So astrology is built that way. It can achieve anything that you want it to achieve. Numerology, oh my God. Numerology has so many different calculators. Pick your sauce, right? That's why when people use numerology and the 17 movement, I just want to throw up. It's so sad. But anyway, back to the woman on the sofa. It's usually a woman because she's got the right brain and usually is more empathetic. You don't. I don't know if, other than John Edwards, I've never seen a male psychic, you know, that claims that they've got this. That I, you know, I probably should have looked up some names. It's probably good I don't mention names, so I don't slander anybody. But yeah, there's been some very famous female psychics out there. But now here's my thought with that. My thought with that is, which is going to feed into Edwards' situation as well, which is very simple. There's either two type of people that would do this, in my opinion. One would be the person who is straight up a con man with a different game. It is more of a psychological session. It is beneficial to you because they're going to be reading your situation and kind of, you know, doing what the psychic does, but with a mechanism on a table. So I think that, I don't know what the percentage would be. I don't know. But what I think happens with some of these individuals is that they have done it at some point in their life. They have proven to themselves that they have this ability every once in a while, perhaps under certain conditions. You know, maybe they're not psychic on a roller coaster, but when you're in a nice, calm room, no interference, and they get a time to be with a human being, they're able to dial in. And they do start to see things. But the problem is when they turn it into a business. That's where it gets challenging. Well, think about it. What singer, okay, could sing 8 hours a day? I don't think any of them can at all. They save their voice until the 2-hour concert, and then they're done, and they probably barely talk until they have to sing again, right, or warm up or whatever backstage, because it's a very exhausting situation. Well, now imagine that you do have this receptacle capability of taking in information from spirits on the other side, perhaps echoes from the person that you're talking to, or some other thing. And under certain circumstances, it works. It has worked. Maybe it's worked dozens and dozens of times. So you start to gain confidence. You have this capability because you have been able to make predictions and they work. And so then you open a business and you get known for this. However, would you ever want to, what would you do if you had a session where you're not getting anything? I mean, nothing. I've never heard of a psychic admitting that they don't have it. Now, these 1-800 numbers, or these 1-900 numbers used to have, you better believe they have a giant computer with almost like a knowledge base lookup system, or they have some cards, or they have like a script in front of them that's allowing them to feed you something. So you may want to rethink that particular situation. I almost guarantee you there's someone in your town that probably has more capability than someone on a 1-900 number, right? I don't even know if those things exist anymore. But so therein lies the dilemma, to say that you could start a business and maybe even charge more money to say, okay, here's the thing. I have off days and I have on days. I have on hours and off hours. And it's not like I'm going to tell you that it's going to be from 10 to 12. I'm just going to be at my house or my place of business. And when I feel hot, when I feel like the universe is talking to me, I'll text you. Then you come over, you pay a premium price, because you're only ever going to get me when I'm warm, when I'm really, you know, feeling it. That would make that be much more legitimate to me personally than to say I always see things all the time and I can always make sense out of it, such that you should part with money and go live your life as a result of what I say. Again, I have no psychic capabilities that I know of, although I've had some really, you know, well, I had one experience, I've said it probably half a dozen times on episodes in the past. Let me just share this real quick to give you a distinction between being psychic, I guess, and maybe what I experienced. I don't know. What I did was I predicted the future in a very intimate way. In fact, it's happened twice. Probably more than that, but at least two that were pretty intense, right? I was, I think, 11 years old. I had just moved to Massachusetts. I was unpacking some stuff upstairs. And it was just myself, a woman who was the wife of my dad's best friend. He owned the house. We were just renting a room for a few months while before we found our apartment. And her son, who was 5 years old, plus a beagle dog. And so I'm just, literally, I just got there. I'm just unpacking a box, and I've taken the box and leaned it on its side, so I have like little shelves in there, and I'm putting my stuff in there. So I get up, I run down the staircase, I turn the corner. It's kind of a, it's kind of a barny house. It was in Haverhill, Massachusetts. But I walk through this kitchen, and as I remember, because I was 11, it was a pretty big kitchen with probably 15, 20 foot ceilings and this sort of wraparound counter. And the mother was mixing up the cheese into macaroni and cheese, that last step you do, right? And she's mixing this up, mixing this up. And I walk in the room, and I'm excited because it's macaroni and cheese, right? And she goes, "You want any macaroni and cheese?" And I'm like, "Do I ever want some macaroni and cheese? Step aside, lady." But here's the thing. No sooner than I walk through the door jamb of the kitchen, my vision starts going purple. And I used to have this as a kid a lot, and it wasn't from standing up. I would just be sitting on the sofa, and I'd be looking at the room, and everything goes this deep purple. It was crazy. It was weird. But this purple thing happened, and I started getting like a little lightheaded, but it wasn't the feeling you get when you stand up and you get lightheaded. That's a different feeling. That's more like you're about to completely lose control of your body and potentially pass out. I had no pass out thing, but I started holding my head, and I'm with my left hand, I have my left hand, there's a door to the kitchen over here, and I just said, she goes, "Are you okay?" And I said, "Someone's going to be at that door, and they're going to be hurt." And like a few seconds later, bam, 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 the door bangs. Her five-year-old son had been bitten on the stomach by the dog, because he's probably beating up the dog. And she pauses and looks at me, and the door is banging, and she can hear her son crying on the other side of the door. And I just said that. And so she's pausing. And then it took her like 2 seconds, 3 seconds to throw the pan down and go to handle her son who needed to go to the hospital for stitches. Weird, right? The second time I super duper remember this, and I've told this story several times, but I just want to throw this out there so you kind of know where my mind's at in being skeptical of other people, especially. September 10th, 2001. I'm in bed with my girlfriend. It's her place. I live literally like a country block down the street, and we're like literally up to our necks in the comforter, and for some reason we haven't turned the lights out. She has one on her side, I have one on my side, and I'm looking at the ceiling, and I said to her, "I have this feeling that something horrible is about to happen." And then just as I said that, two planes went like this, zhoom, like this, right in front of my eyes. And for those of you who are on podcast, they flew in literally side by side in opposite directions, vertically to my eyesight, in my mind's eye, against the ceiling. And so the next thing I said was, "And I think it's going to have to do with planes." And she said in the bed, "Yeah, me too." Now, I'm sure she didn't say that because of planes. I think she just maybe had felt something weird was happening. Maybe I was channeling it all and projecting it to her. Don't know. The next day, and I had rarely ever spent the night at her house. That was the weird thing. She always spent the night at my place. The next day, she got up to go to work. And for whatever reason, I was really busy with what I was doing with my life at Electronic Arts. But I guess I was more of a producer at the time because we had a huge reduction in force, and I came out of the director job, went into a producer job, and I didn't have to be at work, I guess, super early is what I'm trying to say. But her phone starts ringing off the hook the next morning, and I'm at her house. You know, you don't answer someone else's telephone, but it was weird because who would call her in the morning? And they just kept ringing and ringing and ringing. She's calling me from the cell phone telling me something's happened in New York. I don't know what's going on. And then I obviously turn the television on, and my mind is blown, right? But it took me a while to remember that I had said that. That's the other weird thing. It wasn't like the next morning I was like, remember me telling you last night this and the planes. You have to understand, the plane vision, I still see it in my head today. The kitchen, I still see it like it was just yesterday. That's the other weird thing about those moments. Now, the other one that I think a lot of us have, which I haven't had this since cell phones. This is weird. But with home phones, there used to be this thing where you would be heavily concentrating in a book or doing something because we didn't have the internet. We were actually learning things. And you would look at the phone and go, the phone's going to ring. And it would ring. And you predict it. This happened all the time. I think you didn't hear the first ring because you were so embedded in what you were doing, but your brain heard it and says the phone's ringing. And so you look at the phone, you don't consciously remember the first ring, but you predict the second ring. Anyway, thought I'd throw that out there just to kind of full disclose, you know? So I have sympathy for people that perhaps in their lifetime, they've had these experiences that are very legit. But unlike my experiences, which were, God, 20 years apart from each other, their experiences are much more common. And so they do nurture it. They, you know, what if something happened to you a lot that was really strange? What if you saw ghosts all the time? Well, you might realize something that's indicative of your body, of the environment that happens prior to seeing a ghost. And so you're like, oh it's going to happen right now. And then poof, there it is, right? But if it only happens to you one or two times in your entire lifetime, you don't have any like precursors that you're memorizing because of repetition. So for us, it would be very random, you know? I've had other really strange things happen to me in my lifetime as a kid, especially with telephones. And I wouldn't call it psychic, but damn, I don't know what the hell it was. You know, I feel like sharing. I got a big cigar here, so I'm going to go ahead and say it. If you remember this, you're a hardcore Deep Thoughts listener, let me tell you. In fact, comment if you remember this, because I don't even remember last time I said this story. I'm a little kid. I come home after school, like all kids, 3 o'clock, because that's how long we went to school in Kansas. I make up my bed. I had a captain's bed. And my mom's room is the one next door. It's a 2-bedroom apartment. I hear a telephone. Because the old telephones, kids, used to have bells in them, and it was a little knocker arm that hit the bell. She had a red phone that looks like those red phones that you would have the president have on his desk in one of those old 50s, 60s, 70s movies. It looked just like that. And I always thought it was weird because it was red, just kind of bloody red. Who the hell buys a red phone? Unless you have like a red apartment, which we didn't. We had always had country and wood and everything. But I'm making my bed, and I hear the phone go, bing, in the other room. And so I go to the other room, and my mom's bed was like a queen-size bed up against a headboard with the shelves in it. You know, you put books in it and stuff. A couple sliding doors on both sides. She always kept the phone on top of a book, just right over her head, right? And so it's on the mattress, and it's kind of off the hook. And so I'm kind of going, that's weird. Like, I don't know where the phone was before I entered the room, because I never go in my mom's room. So maybe I thought maybe she put it in some cockeyed weird position, and then it just finally just gave up and rolled over, and that's why it's there. No big deal. So I put the phone back on the hook and, you know, push it deep inside the thing, and I go off and continue working in my room. Now, more than a couple seconds later, I hear a bam. Same bell inside the thing, because if you hit the thing on the ground, the bell, the little hammer hit the bell, and you get the little chime, right? So this time, and it only had a 6-foot wire, so it was really cumbersome, because, you know, it's eating like 3 feet just to get to the headboard, and then there's like 3 feet to yank it out and have a little quick conversation, right? I always thought it was so cool to have a telephone in your room back in the day. But now I go, and I look, and there's about 2 feet between the bed on the left side and the wall. And the fucking thing is on the ground with the receiver pulled out as far as it could go. And now I'm getting freaked out. Now I'm like, okay. If there's a burglar in here, it'd be pretty impossible because the closet doesn't have any space. There's no space under the bed. And why wouldn't they just kill me, right? It's broad daylight, man. And so I'm like, I put this, it's a red phone, you know, it's like that whole, you know, satanic color scheme or whatever. So I put the thing back on, I push it back in, and now I'm out of there. My room's clean anyway. So I leave, close the door, didn't lock it. And I just run over to my buddy, Jeff and Jim's house. And because I don't think I had their phone number, it just wasn't like that in the 70s. I'm like, okay, I got something weird going on at my house. What's going on? Well, this telephone thing, boom, bam, two things. And they're like, really? Weird. And so we're all coming back over to the house. And Jeff, in this particular case, was the older kid. He's probably a couple of years older than me. I don't know, maybe he's 13. Pretty tall kid. We're all running up the stairs to the apartment. He's able to go in because the door is unlocked, because that's what it was in the 70s. And he no sooner goes in than he comes running out the door. And he's got his hand over his face. This is a kid who beat me up the first day I met him because I gave him a bunch of shit. It was pretty funny. It's how we became best friends. He put me in a full Nelson. I just couldn't get out. But he's white. The kid's white. I can still see his face to this day. And I'm like, whoa, what's going on? He goes, the phone in your kitchen is on the ground. And it's got the, you know, the dit sound, because that's what they used to do to let you know your phone was off the hook. So I go in there, and it's one of the nice, you know, banana kind that go on the wall with the nice round push buttons instead of the rotary thing. And we're all freaked out. So I put the thing back on the phone, left, and we hung out at his place until my mom came home. Never happened again. How weird is that, right? And nothing stolen from the house. There's plenty of jewelry everywhere. So if there was a thief, they would have stolen everything. They would have molested me or whatever, right? So I think there's some weird stuff in the world. Now, let's get back to our psychics. Let's talk about the psychic that can touch something and recreate its journey. The interesting thing about that is, because there's two types of things that the police officers do on a regular basis, okay? And it's for a regular basis because I think it works at some level that's handy. And, you know, a lot of these folks get accused of reading newspapers and just deducing. Okay, whatever. If you're helping to solve a crime, I don't care if you put underwear on your head and a bra on around your face. Do it, because it'll help us close cases, hopefully. But there's two formats to this. They'll give a psychic an article of clothing or possession of a victim that is sadly, in some cases, dead. So that's one archetype. We have to keep that in our brain. Then you have a weapon, a knife, a pistol, that is get, or even a cigarette butt from someone who was smoking cigarettes and waiting for someone to capture them. And that's someone who's alive. Now, sometimes they've guided cops right to the bodies. And then you're kind of like, oh God, is this person involved with the Church of Satan and just knows where the bodies are buried? The other one is that they'll illustrate a person's face to give you a description of what the killer might be looking like. And a lot of times it's accurate. It's so weird, man. So what happens in our ethereal soul world that might explain that? Because that's the interesting thing. What would have to happen scientifically with our science, not just the capital S religion science, but what would have to happen for that to work? So let's go with someone who's passed. You're touching some article of clothing on their half. Well, in one scenario, it could actually be very simple. The spirit that was killed sticks around, and they work on both sides of this equation, the killer's stuff or their stuff. They may actually show up for work on the day that the psychic person who actually has an, you know, every once in a while, some real legitimate psychic capabilities, and they simply go, okay, this person's open to communication with the other side, and so I'm going to use that mechanism to talk to him. I'm going to show him where my body is. I'm going to make justice happen on Earth. Let's hope justice exists on the other side. So it'd be just as simple as when you hold someone else's stuff. It's a very interesting thing, isn't it? It's weird. If you go to a department store and you hold a piece of cloth from an outfit that you want, a jacket you might want, some jewelry, If anything, you're seeing the factory it was created in, because there is no passion and soul in this object in most cases, because it was manufactured for someone else to own it, for someone else to fall in love with it, for someone else to use it as a utility or whatever. But once you're given something that has been around for a while, and it's been a blouse, it's been a scarf, it's been some, you know, bracelet or something, well, they loved that thing. They made a choice to buy it. They put it on their body. Their body is a symbiotic creature of soul, body, and mind. And so that object, being made of the same general energy type that the soul has to borrow to exist, there may be an echo, a straight up echo of its original owner. But even without being psychic, you know, how many of you have like been over a friend's house or your grandparents' house, and they give you something from your grandmother, your grandfather, great grandmother, great grandfather, and you can hold it. And you're like, oh my God, I'm holding something that my relative, you know, 100 years ago held. It's a special thing, and you sort of have this psychic moment with it. It's not like you're predicting anything or seeing the past necessarily. You're just having this amazing connection with this object. And it could be simply that they follow their objects for a while just to see where they go, you know? I got all kinds of things in my house of really no value, but it'd be interesting to see where they perish at some point. As I go to the other side, I'm going to be like, where's my Les Paul going to go? Who's going to use it? Is it going to go in good hands? Is it going to get ground up somewhere? Is it going to get, you know, in a flood and explode? Maybe I'll sit around and watch it. And if my grandson or whatever picks it up, I'll be there. Be like, here's how you do the lick, brother. You know, boom, boom, boom. Move your hand a little bit there, you know. Pluck it this way. Who knows? Very basic example, but it could be just as simple as that. And I'll be honest, that's what I think happens. I know that's sort of like a backdoor to the theory, but that's how simple I think it could be. Now, if it weren't that, then it would be sort of like The Shining. Best written by Stephen King, best directed by Stanley Kubrick, where Scatman Crothers is talking to the kid, explaining the Overlook Hotel. I know we recently mentioned this, but we're on topic here. And he said that there's just echoes of the past. You know, if I got into a pool and I walked around and I got out of the pool, well, you know, the pool is made of pretty chaotic water. And so it's going to reconstitute back to what it was. No evidence I was ever there. Unless I pee in the water. But if I were to get into, say, someone who's built a beautiful sandcastle, and now it's time for it to go down, go there, destroy it. We won't do the other side of the game. And I go up and I destroy it and mess with it. And he's like, good, good, great. Well, if I walk away and someone sees my work, well, it's there. It's stationary. It's for the most part. And you can see what I did. So now expand your thinking, and potentially there's, you know, in this channel, we acknowledge two forms of energy. Ethereal energy, which is really a non-charged particle that in certain behaviors is classified as either positive or negative, but it's all just dust floating around this box that we're in. All right, so is there residual ether around a particular object? I would tend to think not, because I think it is ever renewing. But perhaps some of the currents from its owner are still sort of hovering around the object. It has an influence. And through familiarity with currents, a psychic might be able to literally reverse engineer the feeling to a brunette, to a blonde, to a big nose, to a pointy nose, to a cleft chin, whatever. It's a bit of a stretch for me. But the other one, the other energy source that we call energy for the lack of a better classification, would be your soul energy. A little bit of your identity on that tree branch of all life. Okay. Well, we just talked about in the bilingual aphasia episode, the notion that the fractal, which is the same fractal that happens in the arteries in your lung and the branches in a tree, it seems to be that, you know, regardless of where the fractal ends, it really doesn't end. It really just gets so microscopic that you can't see it. Look at a Mandelbrot set or a Julian set or whatever, and you'll see it. As it is below, so too it is above. All right. So what if this microphone right here, of which I've recorded, I have two of these. Two stands that look very similar. One's in my office for now, and one's right here. As the stands start to die, I take this broken one inside. But probably at least 250 shows on this mic. Okay. So maybe if you own this mic, there's a little bit of me on there forever. My branch, the biggest, thickest branch is right here. It's my soul. It's who I am in this particular body at this moment in time. Once my body ceases to function, the branch will simply find another embryo to attach to, and then boom, I'm reborn. Maybe it goes off into some other wild dimension. But what if, just like a normal branch, you see a branch on a tree, and that's the one you used to tie the old tire to and swing on, right? It's the one you used to climb up there and relax and read a book. Well, you know, if you broke a branch off in 1980, but you come back 10 years later, more branches have grown out of the big branch. What if soul energy attaches to things? I am spending a fair amount of my life by this microphone. Every episode's an hour and a half to 2 hours, even though it might be only an hour for you. Well, it's thousands of hours on this mic, at least hundreds. And so maybe, even if I don't have any soul energy in that mic, personally, I'm not feeling like the mic is talking to me or holding a little bit of my memory in there. Maybe it is. But it's got a little piece of me on there. And a psychic merely touches it, and they just feel the branch up to the soul that used to use this mic. And so you are feeling and seeing in your brain, because you can rasterize the connection, a physical body. The guy was 6 feet tall. He was skinny. He had a bum eye. He had a scar on his face. Whatever. You're doing a database lookup on the connection. It's like tracing a packet on the internet. Where'd this internet packet come from? Well, let me check. Trace, 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 trace. Oh, Egypt. Okay. Maybe that's the way that particular one works. By the way, if you haven't seen the movie Dead Zone Well, I can't remember who directed it, with Christopher Walken, based on the book by Stephen King. It is an amazing movie. I mean, Christopher Walken kills this role. I mean, just blows it away. It's amazing. So definitely go and see it if you can. It's probably free. Definitely worth a rental. $3.99 for damn sure. But now let's go over to John Edwards. I was still watching TV when John Edwards got famous on TV, and I can't remember what channel it was. I feel like it was VH1 or something like that. Maybe it was Sci-Fi or something like that. But he had this show. For those of you who've never seen the guy, he's just an average dude. And he has a town hall format where he's got a circular stadium seating. And he sits in the middle, and people sit there and watch. Now, the truth of the matter is, he filmed for about 12 to 13 hours a day. One of my friends went to the show, and he will just start listening, and then he starts saying things. Now, the law of averages are really high, that no matter what he says, someone in the room is going to have some intimate experience with whatever he says. But he takes it further and further and further, to a point where when I think the guy's on, he is, for my money, if someone were to say, okay, we know everyone who's psychic in the world for real, and those that aren't, you got a gun to your head, name a person that you think is actually psychic, I would say John Edwards, to be honest. And there was two that I remember out of dozens of shows that I watched. And just so you know, my friend who went to the show said that he fails a lot, and he sets everybody up to say, look, it's not always on. So I'm doing my best. We're going to harvest the ones that connect. But if your relatives, because he talks to dead people, he said, if your relatives come at me super strong, then I have a really strong message for you. but it almost seemed like it was a skill that you had to develop on the other side as well. I don't know. Take his word for it. Why not? But there were two that I thought were just profound, and because they were very specific from the very beginning, at least the way it was edited, and one of them had a post-interview with this gangster from New York that utterly blew me away. But one of them was, he started mentioning a woman that died in her house. And he was very specific about how this all went down. And no one's saying anything. No one's going, yeah, that's mine. Because it's too generic, right? But this kid, he starts saying, he goes, one of you, he goes, I feel like it's right over here. And he goes, one of you found the body, and that's not what they wanted to have happen, and they know that it was very, very traumatic for you. And, you know, part of this is just mathematics, right? Of course, anyone who finds a dead body of a loved one is going to be traumatically affected unless something really bad is going on in the family. But the kid, this young teenage kid, starts just silently sobbing. And then he's like, is it you? And the kid's like, not even wanting to say it was him. And then he went on and mentioned like several details about the situation, about where the body was, how they found them, what they did next. And your mind's just blowing, right? And this kid just unloads. It's almost like the kid had never cried it all the way out. Like nobody knew that this had happened. I think that was part of the fact process, and he had held it in, and he's really young, you know what I mean? When you're young, you really have your right brain and your emotions, usually, if you're not vaccinated to death, you're alive, man. When you get older, you get harder, and you shut off your brain and all that kind of stuff, so this kid was really alive, you know? But that one really touched me. I thought, you know, man, he was just going off, rattling off all kinds of details. But the second one, which was even more powerful, was that he started getting this this story in his mind, and he said, "I'm getting." He mentioned the boy's name. It was a boy who died very young, and he started talking about the fact that the funeral was a big deal in the neighborhood, and that everybody came, and this woman starts to kind of sob, and she's like, she doesn't want to say. Like, it's almost like it's a private matter, even though they're there to hear this kind of stuff. When it finally hits their ticket, it's like they're kind of like, you know, I don't want my personal information out there, but I guess I'm here to hear this. And if they're really breaking through to talk to me, then I got to acknowledge it. But the woman starts to acknowledge this particular story. And then John proceeds to talk about the people that had already passed to the other side that picked up the kid as soon as he went to the other side. And I believe he was one for one perfect with his predictions, meaning a father or someone that was already on the side, because the people sitting in the bleachers were the grandparents. And the mother, the grandmother, was looking at her husband, who's got kind of like shaded glasses on. And I think he was chewing on something, some candy. And you could see he was fighting his emotions, because he's the old-fashioned man. You don't show your emotions, right? So they then interview this guy afterwards. And it was probably the only post-interview that I can remember. But this dude is like in a chair by himself. He's chewing on the candy or whatever it was, which was kind of annoying. But that was his defense mechanism to kind of distract himself from being super emotional. And he's like your Italian guy, little a gold necklace with a little amulet from the Catholic Church on there. And he is hard as a rock, man. I mean, this dude, you could just see him working for John Gotti, man. But he's like, they're like, well, what did you think about, you know, John's reading? And the dude's sitting there, and you can tell he is like on the cusp of releasing tears. In fact, I kind of think he did, but I don't think it rolled down his face. But you couldn't see his eyes because of the glasses. But he started getting super choked up which I'm sure for that guy is a pretty rare emotion. But his words, that the only words I can really remember him saying was, he starts nodding like this. Just, for those of you on audio, just a slight nod. And he goes, John's for real. He goes, I'm a believer now. And he goes, you have to understand, I fought my wife tooth and nail not to come to this stupid thing. But he goes, I'm a believer. The dude's for real. And that always stuck with me. And because John never, at least in my experience, ever seen the guy interviewed. He's been interviewed with other psychics that were busted. He, in everything I've ever seen, was never arrogant about his capabilities, never flippid, very honest about it not working all the time. And I thought, man, either that's a gimmick or to be, you know, seem more legit to us, or he's for real. And that's sort of what I thought about that guy. And he was the one that I really, because he said publicly, look, it doesn't always work. And they don't come in with visions that I understand, because sometimes they'll talk in metaphors for me and I'm trying to translate them to you to have someone sort it out for me. I thought that was pretty legit. You know, I won't even bore everybody with the old story, but, you know, go look up my episode on ghosts and demons and you'll get the story again. I've said it several times, but I don't remember the other episodes. Probably Afterlife has it as well. Reincarnation definitely has the story as well. But, you know, I've had a personal experience, Walt Disney, that it's legit. You know, never worry about the afterlife. It's there. And from what I can tell, it's on your terms. You are not, I guess if you're a good person, you don't have any penance you have to pay or something like that, you're there. Now, the only other thing that I could think someone could insinuate would be, what if your punishment for being a bad person is you can't leave until you work something out? And so, that's a potential outcome. You know, maybe I met Walton at Walt Disney because he did something bad, you know. I do want to put like a little footnote. I am probably going to do an episode on Walt Disney, 100% dedicated. It is, and this is kind of off topic here, but, you know, the Disney franchise is obviously not what Walt Disney created. And I think we have to extend that to him because he's long gone. If any of the Mouseketeers had any issues with him, as insinuated by just kind of broad stroke, oh, this place is wicked and da 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 da. Okay. Well, there's plenty of time for people to come out and say something. I haven't heard anything. The guy was so involved in his work. He lived at the park, literally, after 1955 to 1965 when he died. He lived above the fire station. He was building a new apartment over the Pirates of the Caribbean to move his family into it so they could spend time with him as well. But he died before that, you know, New Orleans area was opened. So didn't go anywhere. But I'll tell you, you know, people who knew him, who I've talked to, they were like, this guy was so legit and so wonderful and just wanted the world to be a wonderful, beautiful place. That's why he created Tomorrowland, to inspire us to go to the next level. Always trying to make happiness. I mean, all of his scripts were the Grimm's Brothers stories from the, I guess they're 1800 stories, but they all ended badly. And the German tales were to get kids to behave by telling you that if you wandered out in the woods, you get eaten by a wolf. If you met a woman who lived in a shoe or whatever, they'd kill you. I mean, it was always death, death, death. And I didn't learn that until American McGee did his series on the Grimm Brothers, which was a very clever video game, but the engine, the Unreal Engine, wasn't up to snuff for what he was doing. But he was the one that taught me that these are actually really negative stories. And I was like, oh, geez. So Walt took all those stories and spun them in a positive way and made billions, okay? But let me just finish up that little scenario. I'll jump off in a massively detailed episode about the guy. at a different time, but what if you were responsible for creating a place where little kids went and families went and little kids worship the product line and all that kind of stuff? And then you die. Maybe someone kills you. Nobody thought that Walt was in any life-threatening situation. He went to the hospital to get his throat looked at, and he died. And everybody was shocked. Someone would take over your company who has bad intentions for those little kids. And then what happens? The company's named after you, literally. And then it all maps to you. Well, that's not fair, right? So before you jump off on that, now, what it is today, I think we've got some pretty bad situations here and there. A lot of the pedophiles that have been caught this year and last year are all Disney employees, you know, former executives even. It's bad news, but where would you go? You go become a preacher? You would go become a Boy Scout, Cub Scout leader? There's plenty of pedophiles in those groups. Are you going to blame the whole organization for that one thing? In some cases we do, in some cases we don't. Now let's talk about psychics that predict the future. Because that's very interesting. Now, I promised I'd talk about cold reading and warm reading. Some of you know way more about this than I do, so I'm not trying to put myself out as an authority. But I've definitely spent a good 25 years thinking about it after I was taught how it works, at least the basics of it all. Now, the cold reading is defined as a person's in front of you, and they're giving you as little as information as possible. But psychologists and magicians that use psychology will tell you they are giving up something, even though they think they're not. I just met a great magician, Brett Allen. He's here in Huntington Beach, and we smoked a cigar together, and he did a few tricks for me, and he did two psychology tricks for me. And he gave me a white clay ball and a black clay ball. He said, here's the thing. I'm looking for the black one. So I'm going to turn around, and I want you just to mix these things up in your palms, figure out which one you have it in. And then I'm going to turn around, and I'm going to look at you, and I'm going to ask you to say that the black ball is in neither hand. No matter what I ask you, just say no. And I said no both times, but he's looking me right in the face. And he's like, it's right there. He was right. It's okay, maybe it's a fluke. Let's do it one more time. Mix it up again, and we'll do the no thing. No. No, he got it right. Because I don't tell lies. When I tell lies, there must be some little thing in my face. But then he made it even easier. And this was hilarious. He said, say yes now. And for whatever reason, saying yes made my read 10 times better. And I forgot how I shook my head or whatever it was, but I hesitated just a tad because I had to tell a lie. And I don't do that. Why do that, right? And he goes, you saw it. You did that, right? And I go, yeah, Christ, that's so awesome. You know, he's like, yeah, that's why people, I can do this all day long and I'm always right, because most people aren't con men and they don't have a good poker face. Boom. But a cold reading will go something like this. They usually will have to tell you sort of what they're looking for. Because then you're like, well, am I trying to help you with your relationship? Am I trying to help you with your finances? What is it? You know, you're just unhappy in general. Like, they usually get some objective from the person. And the one woman that got busted on television, she was actually in a, she was actually on, it was one of these three-way call things. I think maybe Larry King or something. She was in one remote location. The other guest was in a different location, and the host was in whatever, the studio. And she looked at the other guy and she goes, well, I can see that you're probably, she said, I can see you're having prostate issues. And he's like, you're just saying that because I'm old. She goes, well, you better get it checked out. You know, she has all the responses. Well, he doesn't, you know, unless he got a colonoscopy, literally, or not even that, just the old checkup, you know, check your oil thing. Like the day before, he would not know. And so she can put doubt in his mind, and then she seems legit. Luckily, the prostates in my family work really well. So occult reading will go off of a lot of just physical indicators from the person, either in like subdermal reactions, or it will simply be, you know, they look like they're 16, probably in the middle of that kind of relationship thing, probably being dumb in this particular way. And so you just make predictions and you're waiting for the response from their face or their body language. And then you know you got a hit or a miss. And you just keep diving in on all the hits. It seems like magic. But it's just straight up psychology. And again, it has value if the session you're having with the person is either entertaining or it's just logic. There's value in both systems, right? What's a placebo medicine? It's a medicine you think works. You take it. Your mind develops neuropeptides and advanced immune system with biofeedback sort of thing. And you fix it yourself. It's like the kid who got in the hot springs in South America to fix his cancer in the book The Holographic Universe. And you can see his pelvic x-ray. He lost at least a quarter of his pelvis where his hip bone was. He lost the top third of his femur bone, something like that, 25%, something like that. So he lost his whole ball joint, the cartilage, everything. But the kid went to this hot springs for several months. I want to say like 16 months or something. It was a long time. He grew the whole thing back. Can you imagine that? Growing back your hip, growing back your pelvis joint, the top of your femur, plus the cartilage cap on the end to make it nice and lubricated, right? Smooth. Boom. We can fix ourselves 100%. God has given us everything that we need. It's cynicism. It's trying to be hard. All these things that just make us divorce ourselves from the balance of nature that was placed in us by the Almighty. And you can call it the universe, whatever you want to call it. Same thing. Now, warm reading is exciting for a psychic, I would say a con man psychic, because they're getting all kinds of information off of you. You can come inside to a psychic and go, okay, well, I'm in this new relationship. The guy seems a little fishy here and there, but I love him to death. But he does these things that are so sweet, and I think that he might be a good guy. I just don't know. What do you think? Boom, the psychic's going to start their script, and it's a script that helps them evaluate a human being. It would be the same kind of conversation you'd have with a really good parent who's had a good experience in relationships and would just talk you through it. Except they will talk in sort of a backhanded way that seems psychic. Still has value. It's just a game. So, no criticism on my end. Now let's talk about, I don't know if this is considered psychic. I think it is. Let's talk about a seance. What's the typical anatomy of a seance? Well, you bring several people together, which I don't quite understand the several people thing. And you can hold hands, and there can be a crystal ball, and there can be all kinds of things. Doesn't have to. You can have the session with one person, and the psychic. But they then do something called channeling. And channeling, I have seen so many hoaxes of this. Talk about entertaining. A person trying to fake channeling an alien, boy, if you just want to see some funny stuff, just go up to YouTube and type in man channels alien. And there's some hilarious things. One of them is a guy, he started talking like this. He started, because he grew up in the 50s. And so he started talking like aliens were portrayed on TV. To him, it's legit, man. Aliens always talk like this in monotone voices, and people talking weird, you know, tongue languages and that kind of stuff. You know, the whole thing about speaking in tongues, it's like, wow. If Christianity was correct and you had, you know, your Jesus and your Satan talking in tongues, boy, if there wasn't a Linda Blair exorcist moment, it would be talking in tongues. Why would the Almighty God make you speak in some gibberish foreign language to behold God, to get information from God. Yeah, let's send down a bunch of gibberish that no one in the room is going to understand because I really want to be heard, right? The whole theory of it is just insane. Now, maybe talking in tongues is more of a just some weird pent-up energy that is just like actors. You know, an actor is supposed to speak all the syllables, right? You know, the little exercises before you go and speak clear lines, you would speak something like red leather, yellow leather, that kind of stuff, right? Get your tongue totally untied by going through tongue twisters. And it might be just that the human mind just has a bunch of fodder in it, and it just comes out in this blah, 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 you know, thing, and then they feel better. They're exercising demons or something. Now, I haven't heard anyone say that tonguing is demonistically purging something. That might make a lot more sense to me if all this other stuff was correct, which I don't necessarily believe. But what if there's some, you know, life force here on Earth we don't see, therefore it doesn't exist, and then it actually does exist, and then it just pushes through, and you loosen your brain up to take on some other consciousness, and there it goes. Boom, 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 you know. But now, could someone puppet someone else as a possession? Well, yours truly has a weird story for you, and let me know if you've heard this one before, because I have told it. This is a weird one for me. And again, for me, it's just, it's almost like I feel like a kid in a candy store when something like this happens to me, because I have no moment in my life where I'm like, oh, I bet this is going to happen, or I just read this book on this and then it's going to happen to me. You know, my alien experience was like that. I was reading a book to my girlfriend, woke up, and an alien told me what was in my present. I went back to bed and I was certain it was one thing and it was another thing. And I woke up the next day, grabbed it, and I was like, oh my God, it's not a record, it's origami paper. And I've never seen origami paper in my life. Didn't know it was square. Always thought it would be like 8x11 or something. And it was right. It was really weird. But I'm in this house. It is 2013, summer. And I was crunching some code on a personal project of mine. And so I was sleeping in there, not to wake up the girlfriend. And I got up. And I remember having no sense of pain in my body, which we kind of convince ourselves we don't have any pain in our body. And, you know, when you hit your 40s, you start getting aches and pains there. You sit too much in a chair. You're not out walking around like a kid. It's keeping your body healthy because we're supposed to be moving, not sitting down like I'm doing right now. But I get up and I just feel this weird peace. I mean, it was the most tranquil feeling, no threat, no alarm of any kind, but I didn't realize what was going on until I got up. I'm buck naked. I turn the door and I'm walking down the hallway. And all of a sudden it dawned on me. There's another consciousness in my head having a separate conversation. And as I'm walking down the hallway, I hear it say, In almost like a reflection of like awe, it said, isn't it funny how they build homes so they can feel safe on this ball? And yes, it was a ball. And immediately in my brain, there's a toy version of my house. I'm not saying it was accurate, but it was a toy thing, toy house on this really small earth ball. And in terms of degrees on a 360, I would say is about a, maybe a 20 degree angle of the house on the ball, right? And so then when I heard that, I was like, almost like, who's there? You know, I'm like, whoa, but I didn't want to disturb it. Like immediately I was like, whoa, there's something here. And maybe this is the reason why I'm not feeling any pain. I could feel my feet on the hardwood floors, but it was weird. It was just the most wonderful feeling. So then I'm like, okay, let's not disturb this thing and lose it, because this is a really cool experience, right? But it said the phrase, isn't it funny how they build houses to keep themselves safe? And so my first question to it, because I butted in, and I got to the end of the hallway and I just stood there. And in my hallway, I have two cupboards. One has the towels, one has all my electronics and just junk parts in there, right? And so I'm standing there and I go, well, where are we then? Like, if this is silly to build a house, I mean, obviously we need homes. It rains, it gets cold. We need a home. And you think this is funny, means that person, that being, hadn't been human for a really long time or ever, right? And so it says, it had this epiphany moment, and I could feel it inside me. It went, oh, you're here. You can hear me? Like, it was that kind of epiphany, but it was more of like a, it was almost like a rapid, it'd be like someone human responding if they were talking to themselves in a room and they didn't know you were listening. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, yeah, yeah, I was just talking to myself. Da, 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 da. It was like that kind of feeling, right? But it says, I'm trying to think of the exact words it said, or at least the really accurate paraphrase, because it said, he goes, oh, no, no, no. It's beautiful. Let me show you where we are. And then a translucent sphere came from outside of my body spectrum and shrunk right in front of me. And it was probably about literally the size of a basketball right in front of my face. Of course, it's most likely in my mind's eye. And it goes, we're all here. And it's a wonderful place to be. And it gave me this amazing feeling of, you know, it's not like heaven, but it's like the universe. It was like, we're all one and we're all here and this is beautiful. And it wasn't trying to say my episode about us all being the same being, because it was definitely distinct for me. But it was trying to say, and I got this sense of just euphoria of like, there is nothing to worry about when it comes to death at all. I mean, it solved that equation for me if I hadn't already had it solved. It's like, no, you're going to love this. When you find out where we are and what's going on, you're going to dig it. So just relax, right? So my cousin Larry that just passed, he's there, right? Okay. So now I gotta go take a shower. And I'm kind of like, I don't want to shake this thing. But for whatever reason, I'm on autopilot. I should have just stood there till it went away. So I just had a big conversation with it. But me and my disciplined, you know, life, I went around the corner and I purposely skipped brushing my teeth, which I usually hate being in the shower with a, you know, gross mouth, because I knew that if I jammed a brush in my head or used my electric toothbrush or whatever, because I use both, I alternate, I just thought it's going to leave. I don't want that. So I start the water. And now what's happening is I'm kind of looking at the ground a lot, because I'm like, I'm trying not to focus on anything because I want it to focus. I want it to do what it wants to do. And it's not controlling my body at all. And so I hop in the shower because it's nice and warm. And I don't know how to explain this next last thing I heard, which was I lifted up my hands and they're being showered with water, of course, and it's warm. It's nice. And I am turning my hands back and forth, looking at them. And it says, wow, it's been a long time since I've been in a body. I don't know. And then I never heard from it again. Never happened to me again. But wow, what a cool little experience, right? Now, channeling has been used to advance massive frauds in this world. The latest gigantic fraud was Planet X. Somebody, I can't remember who said it, they supposedly did this a long time ago, but they communicate with an alien on the planet Nibiru, circling the sun Nemesis, and boy, they're going to come and enslave us again to dig gold up again so they can squirt it into their atmosphere because that's what they need to survive because their planet's dying. I mean, what a joke, man. A mini solar system that orbits into our solar system and doesn't cause massive havoc, doesn't slam into anything. And the story was that they were here, you know, thousands of years ago, incubated man. And, you know, I got a whole episode on Planet X if you want to hear me just tear this thing a new one. But the theory, no one ever thinks through anything, right? They're like, just love a conspiracy and just hang on to it for no reason whatsoever. But the idea is this planet's come screaming through our solar system between Venus and Earth. The whole solar system fits between Venus and Earth. And, you know, there's a lot of space in space. Okay. All right. If you're heliocentric. But somebody had the technology to jump off their planet, come to our planet in this split second. I mean, what would that be? It'd be, what, a few months at the most, if it's not going that fast. Jumped off, came to our planet, found, I don't know, hominid, re-engineered Homo sapiens sapien, got us all up to snuff to be able to dig out gold, which is a way advanced thing from hominids, and then got a bunch of gold. It's all out of the South Pole. And then took it up to their planet, and then they're gone for a little while. Okay. If you have that much technology, you could do fusion, and that means they could take anything on their planet and turn it into gold. It's a hell of a lot easier than genetically programming a new life form, okay? No need for this whole thing. But that was all started by a guy who said he channeled. Now, I'm an open-minded guy. I mean, I just told you a story about something inside me. Okay. But when it hatches these ridiculous theories that don't make sense on paper, using their own storylines, then you know you got a fraudster on your hands, someone who's profiting from this whole thing. We had a lot of 2012 stuff, right? December 2012, the whole world was going to end because someone misreads a heavily damaged Aztec calendar. Right. What was the other ones? Atlantis. Most of the evidence for Atlantis, and I mean most of it, is all channeling people. Well, they created this story based on some old writings from Greece and just elaborated and entertained. Well, you know, if it's entertainment, I don't care. Whatever. Atlanta is not getting people killed or people worrying about things, but the Planet X, you know, I mean, it had people worried about a massive meteor strike in Northern Europe, going to hit the northern plains of America. I mean, people were literally moving around the world and changing their lives because they thought the world was going to end. I mean, I had phone calls to my house where son had freaked out his dad and, you know, told him it was all going to happen. And I said, you know, I just think it's all bullshit, you know. And of course, nothing happened. There you go. Lumeria, the Pacific version of Atlantis is, you know, the other super race that's out there in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. Okay. So I guess in closing, the goal would be to use your logic, keep an open mind, of course, and try to, one, decipher a few things. Entertainment, which has a value. You're escaping for a little while, believing something, whatever. Especially if you know it's entertainment, you're probably going to heavily meter how you respond to the fortune cookie, right? And then there's con men that are trying to help you. And so there's just a psychology session with another human being. You needed it if you went, perhaps. And let's just say they guide you in a logical direction that you couldn't discern by yourself. But if you let them have a warm reading, especially, they're just being a nice friend or a parent. There is value in that too. And then you have folks that legitimately, most likely, do have this capability on one factor that we've mentioned or another. And maybe they're actually able to hold an article of clothing and tell you where the body is or tell you who the victim or who the killer is. That has value. Police officers go because it works. Okay. You see the value? And the other one is like a John Edwards who perhaps assists in closure for certain people. Now imagine you go to John Edwards' session, his show. And you have dead people, everybody has dead people in their past, and you're just kind of sitting there because you want to see if they come and talk to you. But they're looking at you going, you don't need us, you've gotten over us, and you're healthy and you're fine and you're happy. We don't need to get in there and stir things up for you, so we're not going to show up. But the kid who found his mother, I believe it was his mom, dead on the floor, he hadn't healed yet. He had no closure. And I would say, regardless if John was lying or telling the truth, I happen to think he was telling the truth. I think that mathematically, that kid today would say he got closure that day. At least some. And if he believes it was his mom trying to tell him, then it really probably was closure. For the gangster guy and his wife, who lost a grandson, who he was extremely close to, he now believes, most likely based on his own admissions, that one, John was real, but two, that his son, his grandson, is with the other loved ones that have already passed. Hey, that's closure too. That has value. Now, in terms of the ones that have these industrial services where you call in and talk to folks that are reading off a script, well, it probably falls in the other two categories, you know. It's entertainment, and it's potentially some advice that you just need to hear from a stranger. You know, if you got absolutely nothing out of it, only you would know, and only you would know that you had been had. Okay. So I'd be really interested in your personal experiences with this. Even secondhand experiences that you've heard about that seem legitimate to you. So I would like to hear what category that we've covered and maybe that I didn't cover that you have heard some pretty legitimate claims in. And give me some fairly decent details about it too. What made you feel like it was legit? Especially if you've ever had this done to you. John's done so many shows. I'm willing to bet out of 4,200 people, someone might have been on the show. We've all seen the fraudsters, so I don't know what value that would have, but you know, if you have any other epiphanies, definitely share them with the crowd here. But I want to just bumper with something that's just sort of unrelated to the subject matter, because I want to encourage you, and maybe you get it from the show, I'm not sure. But I think that obviously the show attracts a lot of deep thinkers. I think it has to, otherwise you guys would be bored stiff. But here's what I get from doing the show that I think is extremely valuable to me personally, which is I grow immensely because of my own brain churning stuff, which has been my whole life. But I also grow, obviously, because of you. And, you know, it's just like having someone sort of, when you go to work out at a gym, you're intentionally lifting weights that tear your muscles so they get bigger, leaner. You burn off some fat and you get into better shape. Okay, so that's you being very intentional. But when you have a show like this and you get comments, it's almost as if someone is carrying your body into the gym and then yanking you in different directions that tear your muscles. And so you build up, not only because of your own direct involvement, but because of other people's contributions. So if you don't have a show and you're like, I'm never making a show, I would definitely suggest, you know, reading the comments. I just can't stress that enough. I mean, why would anyone tell you to read other people's comments other than to gain something from it? So definitely understand there's some great conversations. And I'm telling you, this is already happening. I know, because I'll put out an episode and... Again, I only get notifications of your posts if you're the original poster. If you reply to someone, then I don't see it unless you're replying directly to my initial post. If I'm replying in a chain with other people, I don't get your notifications. So I try to, you know, expand and see how you guys are dialoguing. But boy, have I seen some great exchanges between people that are just so constructive, and everyone's trying to climb higher and you're trying to enlighten yourselves. We're just in a time where we're all waking up and the internet is the reason why it's happening. So why don't we make sure that you exercise every day? You know, if you've seen every episode I've ever put out, then I guess you could make your own episodes or rewatch an old one or go find something new for me to do an episode on that I haven't done one on. Again, pre-produce it for me. If it's a lot of content I would have to ingest to do the episode, then just pre-produce it like a producer. You go in and say, I read this book, I watched this video, whatever it is, and minute 21, there's this amazing epiphany. If you get me hooked on something, boy, I'll do a deep dive and you'll have an episode dedicated to you. I've done it several times. But that's where the website, deepthoughtsradio.com, comes into hand. Now, I'm having to change the bumper a little bit because we're facing an unknown on YouTube. December 10th, they're going to throw out all these new policies, and they've claimed that they're going to turn off channels that aren't, in their eyes, commercially viable. Whatever that means, right? Hopefully we meet that requirement. But if it doesn't, if we get nipped and the show gets turned off, well, then you're going to have to go to thedeepthoughtsradio.com to get the feeds or have a BitChute account and hope to God they survive, right? I have a lot of you try to help me out with finding other resources to post my videos. The problem with our situation is that the episodes are over an hour almost unanimously, and I don't really want to cut everything into two pieces to get it up on a site, because I don't think anyone ever gets to part two half the time. And that's a lot of investment for me to chop everything up. And so if you want to recommend a platform, do me a favor. Check out the upload policy on videos and make sure that they can go up to 2 hours, because that's as far as I go typically. Brighteon is a joke. Brighteon is censored by design. I mean, it is a joke. It is like a deep state, hilarious joke. And supposedly the guy that runs the place is so anti-deep state, but he needs to rethink his model. I mean, come on, BitChute does it. They do it through a distributed computer system. But you can only put 10 videos up at a time. And then those 10 videos have to hit this amazing view count, which if I'm going to post my channel, I'm going to start at episode 1 and go towards the current one. But you don't get another 10 or 25 or whatever until your first 10 are popular. Well, there you go. You can't have information that's not popular, right? So we would have to have, you know, I don't even know, a few thousand of you dedicated to my Brighteon account to go and watch the same video, well, you know, over and over and over again to get the counts artificially up so I can get to the next 25. And then you got to pound the 25 to get me to the next 50 or whatever it is. It's horrendous. So Brighteon can go bite it. But I haven't found a single other service other than BitChute that allows over an hour. So that's why I'm only on that other alternative. But on the website, you have two video, YouTube and BitChute. You have all the audio you'd ever need. So you can get on there and get hooked up with the podcast. There is two primary social media, which is the Locked Facebook group I mentioned earlier, the Twitter account, and Minds.com. Not sure it's going to survive, but it is a Facebook alternative. Again, I think it's way more beautiful than Facebook and has a lot more cool features on it. So here's the thing. Please go up and create a BitChute account and then subscribe to the channel, because that'll help me out in general, but it will also make sure you're already a part of BitChute if YouTube happens to clip this thing in the middle of the morning, right? The other one is some of the methods I use to raise funds for the show. It pays for cigars at this point. Again, I'm at $75 a month if I have a great month. So it is Patreon, and there's a PayPal account. The advertising on this channel makes about $50 a month if I have a hot month, just so you know. The most I've ever made was last season. I think I cleared $100 one time. So for those of you who think I'm rolling in a Bentley because of the show, think again, okay? But there's two products, Backblaze and Brave. Definitely get the Brave browser. That's all I'm going to say today. There's no season one episodes on this particular channel. So go up there and click on the other YouTube channel with season one. But if you go to BitChute, it's all there. It's just in 1080p. The show was in 1080p up until season 4. And I bought this particular camera, which is 4K. So I like to keep everything 4K because I think people watch it on their televisions at home and it just looks beautiful. It's really great. Plus the effect looks really cool too. So anyway, that's all I've got for you. Hopefully you dug the episode. And until the next one, take care of yourself and someone else. And I'll see you on the next Deep Thoughts. Over and out.